This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Sharp Money is underway from downtown Las Vegas, Bar Canada at D. He's Dustin. I'm Ben. We've got a great guest list coming up today. Lots of talk going to the Olympics with a lot of the main sports, the betting getting underway tomorrow. Also talk some NFL, college football. But right now, we go out to our progressive guest line, talk a little baseball. Dustin's feeling good after his 3-0 day. We're trying to get some more insights here.
You keep saying it. And everyone knows the more you acknowledge the winning bets, the more likely you are to lose the next
few. I'm a play-by-play guy. We don't believe in jinxes, okay? I'm here to, and you're the exact opposite. Opposite is a better. Basically how that works. Anyway, he's MLB Dream. Joins us right now on our progressive guest line from the D.C. area. Great to see you as always, man. Appreciate the time as we come out of this this post-All-Star break window here. We're starting to get some of the trades. What anything you've noticed actionable as far as this first really week now back where you've seen some kind of interesting results here from some teams who've just not shown up at all to some other teams, say like the A's, who just can't stop hitting, it seems like.
Yeah, who would have thought that what month is it? In the end of July, the A's are the hottest team in baseball. Nobody would have guessed. Not so much actionable. Maybe there's a little stuff that if you're plugged to your computer. I mean, stuff like just really quickly, like Nick Lodolo today, we saw his projected strikeouts drop about half a strikeout with the Randy Arozarena trade. Most of the projection systems obviously had Randy in there with this, 25% strikeout percent. So that kind of brought some money in on that under. So it's just kind of reacting to the news as quickly as you can.
Sure thing. Yeah, and speaking of the A's here, who were talking off the jump, score 6 last night. A team that they've been favored very few times. When they have been favored, though, they've won almost all those games, amazingly as that is. And they're getting the Angels, who they've really taken advantage of with some of these pitching matchups here. Even though it's not the sexiest game on the card, that is an angle that you are going to attack today.
Yeah, yesterday it was probably my favorite spot on the whole board, going after Kenny Rosenberg, who, not a household name to say the least. The A's crush lefties, and hey, they've been crushing righties as well. They have a WRC plus of over 140, or I think it's actually 175 over the last 2 weeks, which is best in baseball versus right-handed pitching. They face a former kind of big prospect here in Carson Fulmer. He probably won't go more than 4 or 5 innings. They saw him recently, knocked him around a little bit, and the Angels bullpen is back kind of in the crapper. They could probably see a couple of those arms dealt in the next maybe week or so too. I'm sure teams are interested in, so that's probably going to be an area of even more weakness for the Angels going into the weekend.
I know Dustin's saying speak for yourself on Kenny Rosenberg not being a household name. That was funny.
We went to Temple together growing up, just kidding. look, the Baltimore Orioles, they're in your area. I love them. I have them 16-1 to win the World Series. There's something about young players getting better, improving, that I don't think we always account for. And I do think there's a possibility that some of these guys could really get hot at the right time for them. And I know you like them today. Am I right?
Yeah, I mean, it is a little bit juicy on the money line. I did consider pairing it with another big favorite, a nice little donkey parlay that we all love. But they have a good matchup here with Mazur. I'm probably not pronouncing that correctly, but the pitcher for the Padres is absolutely getting rocked by left-handed hitters this season. We should see about 6 or 7 in the lineup for the Orioles today, but the slash line for him, they're hitting over 340, slugging close to 600 with an on-base percentage over 450 against him. The FIP is over 7, and with about 6 or 7 lefties in the lineup for the Orioles today, I like them. I don't know if they'll quite cover the run line after what we saw yesterday in Miami, but I do think they should put up 5 runs or more today.
Follow him at.
I played them on the.
Yeah, no doubt. That's a good angle to look at too. You follow him at MLB Dream. Always kind to give us some time here on VSiN and Sharp Money in particular, out in our progressive guest line. Couple big series here as we go out to the East Coast. It is the Mets against the Braves. Mets get the win last night. Another homer for Francisco Lindor, down to 19-1 to win NL MVP. But more importantly for tonight, it's the return of Kodai Senga. What can you reasonably expect? We've had this happen now a few times over this past week, post All-Star break, guys making either their debuts or their first starts in months. And it is Senga who gets the ball tonight against the Braves.
Yeah, you're going to love this answer. I really don't have a clue what we're going to see from him. His minor league numbers and the rehab stats were pretty poor. My first thought was I actually wanted to bet the under on his strikeouts, even though the Braves do strike out a fair amount. But through his translator, he had an interview a couple days ago where he said he wasn't really trying to pitch his best. He was just kind of working on some things. So as a bettor, I really don't know what to expect from him, or I don't have really any idea how deep he'll go either. It just comes down to how effective he is. The market was definitely in on his strikeout prop. I'm just not as sure as everybody else.
Example yesterday. I mean, I was out on Kershaw, and he did not look sharp at all, yet if you faded his K prop, you lost. He had 6 and 4 innings. Like, that is the classic case of why this stuff is tough for guys we haven't seen in a while.
Yeah, and look, you're one of the sharpest people when it comes to baseball. So I want to get your thought on this just because, as Ben mentioned at the start, I had a great day yesterday. And what happens when you're feeling good? You start seeing things maybe that don't exist on the board. Went through my bets, placed them, locked them in. All of a sudden I look, every single one's plus money. Maybe getting a little too cute here, but at this point in the season, where do you stand on going after some of these bigger dogs in these kind of weird spots in the market?
I mean, it's tough, right? Because if you, you know, if you're looking at the baseball card once a week and you say, hey, this is probably a decent spot at plus 200, you bet it, you lose. You're saying, I'm not betting this team again. But if you're someone that looks at the card consistently, you kind of have to take great that point. Value. A team that's lined at plus 180 and they should be kind of a little bit closer to plus 150. I mean, yeah, it's hard to get people to bet something that's probably not going to win. Yeah. But again, when you're betting what 1500 to 2000 bets for 7+ months, it's kind of spots that you have to take. And also, I'm someone that will wait for a little bit of money to come in on the opposite side of I like just to get a little bit better price.
Yeah. So, okay. One of those instances right here, it sounds ugly because both pitchers have not been good lately, but I'm going to back Mackenzie Gore on the road with Washington. You're wearing their hat today. It's plus $1.42 against the Cardinals, where Sonny Gray has also been really bad. I don't think he's worthy of laying $1.70. Also, the Cardinals are one of the worst teams in baseball hitting lefties. It just feels like worth the shot in that spot for me.
Like, I can't talk you out of that, right? It's the only thing that's probably keeping me off of that is just how inconsistent Mackenzie Gore has been. He's one of those guys that, like, I personally can't ever project properly. So I do agree with you that there is value on Washington there. Like, if you made me bet that game, I'm probably plugging my nose and taking the Nats. I'm definitely not laying the minus 165 with St. Louis there. So I totally agree.
Sure thing. As far as some of these big market teams, I've really noticed last couple weeks, this goes back to, you know, a few days before the All-Star break, Yankees, Dodgers, consistently now getting bet against in the market. Dodgers, we've had some moves of 25, 30 cents. I don't understand it with the Dodgers. I'm on them too with Gavin Stone today against Framber Valdez. If we start with the Dodger piece, then we'll transition to the Yankees in a second here. Where do you see that coming from, A, and B, how real do you believe that actually is as far as a potential buy-low team that weirdly now, for a team as big as the Dodgers, continues to get disrespected and bet against in the market?
It probably is a decent buy low spot. And just going back a little bit to the start of the season with the Dodgers, they were a team that the second you saw them at a four and a half team total, it was an auto bet. Yep. They were just going to get there. The issue with them is not only have they had a bunch of injuries, the only real threats in the lineup, Teoscar's having a great year, but Ohtani and Freeman, if you have a pitcher that kind of nullifies lefties, like that lineup is going to have a lot of trouble, especially with that bottom half, bottom third, does not look like a World Series favorite lineup.
I would love to get your thought on this because Ben and I were kind of lamenting the fact that you can have a read on a starting pitcher and want to bet a prop on them, but choose the wrong prop. Can you help us with your process of identifying, I like this pitcher and I'm going to go outs recorded, or I'm going to go K's, or I'm going to go walks? Like, how do you go through your process?
Dude, that's what makes baseball so hard, right? It's like you could have the best read, but you have to know how to execute. There's so many different ways to attack guys. A quick example is with the Reds today. I didn't know if I wanted to bet them first five money line or on the team total for the full game, just because Baz has had so much struggles with lefties and the Reds are crushing righties. So there's a lot of factors that come into play, right? Price, has there been maybe a bigger adjustment over the last week or two given their recent performances? And I don't want to say it's a crapshoot, but you're essentially trying to pick your biggest perceived edge. There's not an exact science to it. You can go straight off the numbers, which I don't really always like to do. There is some gut involved in this, especially when you're betting and looking at these games every single day for 6+ months. I think it's part of it is just you just have to guess and try to assume that your projection is ideal.
No doubt. It's easier said than done, but that's part of what drives us crazy, betting baseball day to day. He's MLB Dream. You see him on an FTN Fantasy, their MLB analyst. One other game to get your thought on here for tonight. It's the Yankees, similarly to the Dodgers, getting bet against consistently in the market, and for good reason, at least with the pitcher tonight, Nestor Cortez, who's really fallen off as the weather has gotten warm into summer. A lot of fly balls, a lot of balls out of the park, and you're in one of the best hitting parks in MLB in Boston tonight. What do you make of the spot here with the Red Sox trying to cling to one of those wild card spots, and the Yankees just trying to cling to anything, get some momentum back in their favor?
right? The Yankees are a little bit like what we described with the Dodgers, and maybe it's not so much injuries with them, but it's two guys that you have to kind of avoid. I mean, we saw what the price was on Judge to get walked a couple games ago. I think I saw minus 200 or worse. So you just kind of have to navigate through those two guys, and against the Red Sox offense, it is a lot better than people assume this year. In his last start versus the Red Sox, Cortez really increased his slider usage, got a bunch of Ks. I lean the Yankees here on the money line. I don't want to touch that, maybe because there's a lot of variance. I'm trying to find someone to pair Cortez with and getting 5+ strikeouts at around even money. The strikeout market is so sharp and it's so tight that when these guys are projected at 5.5, it's kind of safe to assume most of the time that they will get that floor of 5. And I just try to kind of find a pair with him on another strikeout I like. I looked at Singer a little bit at 4+, but with the first game of the series, I was telling Dustin this, I like waiting for the umpires, some lineups, sure, because a big difference in the umpire could be the difference between you winning and losing a bet.
It's a great actionable tip as well as we go out. He's MLB Dream. Follow him at MLB Dream. Good to see you as always, man. Appreciate the time.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. Take care.
We'll have some more MLB talk a little bit later, but to the Dallas Cowboys, some of their latest news around quarterback Dak Prescott when we come back on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Hour number two of Sharp Money from downtown Las Vegas, Bar Canada at The D. I'm Ben Wilson. Dustin Sweetelson is here. Olympic ceremony. Just now wrapping up. We're underway in Paris. And U.S. They've been introduced.
Hold on. Not that, like, I'm the most Olympic expert of all time here, but what do you mean they're underway? They've been playing games and had matches all along. How can the opening ceremonies be after the events have already started? That doesn't make sense.
It's logistical purposes is what they would tell you. I don't know.
Well, that... It shouldn't be
too many sports, too few venues to get it all.
It's not called opening ceremonies, then. It's called we've already started ceremonies.
Like, what we're celebrating the archery is what that should be
called.
There's
probably countries have been eliminated, and we're going to say it's opening ceremonies?
Oh, I mean, the U.S. men's soccer team's already lost. Anyway, why can't they get these guys an umbrella? I mean, it's literally pouring rain on the river. Whatever. They're all happy to be there. We're underway. We'll talk some Olympic betting coming up in a little bit. We'll also go into our three-point stance here. A lot of additional NFL news and notes to get into. But right now, let's talk some college football and some NFL from the futures perspective with our pal John Lobb as we go out to our progressive guest line here to start this hour. Fantasy football content creator at Gridiron School 91. Good to see you. John, always a pleasure, man, coming on here. And, yes, we are into that stage of camp. And we'll go NFL first, then go to college football as well. But it's always an interesting time of year where we're trying to figure out where the market is at and where teams could be getting some disrespect based on some of these off-the-field storylines that don't really have much merit right on the field.
Yeah, I'm an old man, so I've been around a long time. I've heard about every narrative or every story that is possible. So I pretty much ignore... I'm only looking to hear from teammates and assistant coaches who wax poetically or complain to, they have to be a really bad complaint, like a rookie running back got my quarterback nailed in practice. He doesn't know how to pass block. It has to be an extreme. All of the narrative from the beat reporters and all of that, or fans, I'm completely ignoring it.
Well, look, I gave you a little project. I want to know, because you're a super sharp guy when it comes to the NFL and college football, some of the teams you're higher on this year than the market may be. And there's one we're kind of in line with, you and I, but I have some reservations because of the maturity of the head coach. Let's begin in the SEC with Ole Miss, because it's hard not to like the offseason that they had, all the transfers they brought in. They return a multi-year starter at quarterback now in Jackson Dart. However, the biggest problem here is Lane Kiffin is still the head coach there. While he is an offensive mastermind, I question his ability to mesh all these pieces together, John. But I do agree. I am higher on them than the market. Why should we be feeling good about that position?
First, we can talk about Lane Kiffin, but they don't play Alabama.
Yep.
And Alabama no longer has Nick Saban. So that does change the dynamics of the SEC, no matter how you look at it. And I'm a Kalen DeBoer guy. I think he's a very good coach. But we're talking about the greatest coach in the history of college football is no longer with the program, right? So that opens up a tremendous opportunity for other teams. Then I always go to the quarterback position. Jackson Dart has started for the past two seasons for Mississippi. And if you haven't been watching Mississippi football, Jackson Dart is a very good quarterback. I think he has first round NFL potential. I have a second round grade on him right now. He also played, I think it was six games at USC before he transferred to Mississippi. And look at that wide receiver core. They are loaded. I love Trey Harris coming back, sneaky NFL prospect. They bring in Antoine Wells, who was at South Carolina and suffered massive injuries. I like their tight end, Caden Prescorn. They brought in, I think it's three offensive linemen. I think two of them are going to start, and the other one gives them depth at the position. Your only challenge is the running back. They kind of have a stable, a nice stable. I don't know if there's a star yet. And look at these games out of conference. Furman, Middle Tennessee, Wake Forest, Georgia Southern. They're going to start out 4-0. I mean, if they're not 4-0 with like a 100-point differential, I'd be absolutely shocked. Kentucky's at home. South Carolina, LSU is going to be a problem in Death Valley. I understand that. And probably the Georgia game, but they get lucky. You play Georgia at home. So I love Mississippi here.
John Lobb with us here on Sharp Money. Engel Martin ain't walking through that door for the Paladins, Dustin, week one. I knew you guys would appreciate that. Love Engel Martin. Great, that former Green Bay Packer preseason starlet who played in one career game for the Pack. Anyway, with that being one of the teams in the SEC, I think, you know, that's it. And by the way, Dart, I'm seeing 14-1 to win the Heisman at DK, fourth shortest shot on that Heisman odds board as well here, John. You look at another team where if you're talking hype, and it's possible certainly in an SEC with how deep it is now to be very, very high. Think of some long shots in a multitude of ways in that conference. Doesn't just have to be one. And University of Missouri is a school you are certainly high on. I would say as an alum, many people who've been around that program for a long, long time have their doubts when it comes to living up to expectations. It's not exactly been Mizzou's forte over the years, to put it kindly, but what do you see in this Mizzou team after a very, very strong 2023 campaign and a good recruiting class that makes you think they could be for real here and potentially get one of those final spots in the college football playoff?
So first I say they did have a good recruiting cycle, and they brought in, they lost some defensive players, and I understand that, but I think they've reloaded on the defensive side of the ball. One thing that I believe we have to understand as college football fans now, this isn't like a three-year rebuilding necessarily anymore with the NIL, with the transfer portal. You can reload rather quickly. Offensively, though, I know they lose Cody Schrader, and he was a tremendous running back. But they bring in two guys, Marcus Carroll from Georgia State, and they bring in Nate Noel from Appalachian State. I like both of those backs. I personally think Marcus Carroll is a little bit better, but you know, I'm not at the practices. This is what I watched last year in game tape. One of those two backs should be good enough. And then I like Brady Cook. I think Brady Cook might be arguably the most underrated quarterback in college football. Look at his last 2 years, my friends. He has been really good as a quarterback. They have arguably the best receiver in the nation, probably the number one draft pick at wide receiver, Luther Burden. I think Theo Weiss, the former wide receiver from Oklahoma, he's pretty strong in that offensive line. I think they return four starters, if my memory serves me right. So you have a good offensive line that can block. And again, look at this opening schedule. Murray State, Buffalo, Boston College. I'm not that worried about BC. They're at home. We'll see what they do. I think the Eagles are going to be competitive, but they should win. Then they get like Massachusetts. They have Oklahoma or Alabama, I'm sorry, is going to be, to me, their big challenge. Are they going to be able to overcome that? I see 9 wins easy possibly 10 for Missouri.
I love it. Look, very manageable schedule, as you mentioned. By the way, John, do you have time to do a second 10-minute segment with us here after next break? Awesome, because this is the info is tremendous. I agree with you on Missouri. Ben went to Missouri. That's why he asked the question. I also think Cook has a chance 40-1 for the Heisman. If this team lives up to the potential, I think Cook for Heisman at 40-1 isn't out of the realm of possibility. Let's kick it around to another league, the Big 12, where it does feel like people aren't acknowledging enough that there's going to be a Big 12 team in this playoff, which means that if you have a big number on a team to win the title, you can start to get creative as the playoff, you know, plays itself out. And there is a team in the Big 12 that returns a quarterback and a running back that are super dangerous that you are higher on than the market.
Oh, I like Kansas State a lot. And I actually think the Big 12 is wide open. I do think Oklahoma State is the best team, but is Gundy really good in big moments? I have my questions about that. But I do think Oklahoma State's the best offensive team in the conference. But I'll tell you this. You know, if you've got to play the Wildcats, they are going to punch you in the face. And I love that style of football. First, they're going to run it down your throat with DJ Giddens. He is a outside NFL prospect. I think he's 212 pounds coming off 1,226 yards rushing. And my friends, you referenced it. If you have not heard about Avery Johnson, the quarterback, he might be Lamar Jackson. That's how dynamic this young man is at quarterback. We know what the Wildcats want to do. They want to run that hybrid RPO, you know, like almost like an option offense with the modern day game, but they are going to just ram it down your throats. They're physically tough. I know it's hard to play in Manhattan when you get to October and November. I really like this Wildcats team. And again, if you look at their schedule, the most difficult games are going to be Kansas. We always know, right? Those in-state rivalry games are going to be tough, but that's at home. West Virginia, who, you know what? You can go into West Virginia, Morgantown. That's a tough game, but I'll give it. And Iowa State on the road. I mean, I think those are the most difficult games. The Wildcats are going to be good if that quarterback stays on the field and he lives up to the hype. I believe he was a five-star prospect 2 years ago who's finally getting the chance.
25-1. One of many kind of trendy targets as far as Avery Johnson, but the athleticism is there. The numbers are going to be there. Should he stay healthy this year for Kansas State? Second favorite right now behind Utah to win the Big 12. He's John Lobb. Follow him at Gridiron School 91. He will stick around with us because we have to dive into the ACC. He has a very notable team with a long shot thought on Heisman this year for a team getting a lot of public publicity and attention. We'll talk about that. And then a couple NFL teams John is a little bit higher on than the market. When we come back, continuing this Friday edition of Sharp Money from Visa.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
It's the Friday edition of Sharp Money. We roll on from downtown Las Vegas, Bar Canada at the D, with a reminder to check out our new look and optimize your mobile website, VSIN.com, with best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state betting tools, and betting guides. And in just a few days, we'll have the full college football betting guide up as well at VSIN.com. That drops as the calendar turns to August because, Dustin, it is about that time. We're ready to go.
Yeah, looking at my Gucci, it's about that time.
Okay, thank you for that.
Shout out to the big timers.
Figured that would come at some point. But job well done. We'll have the college football betting guide, the release show as well, coming up on Thursday. Excited for that. I'll be with Adam Burke talking about all the features we have on the guide, and it's why we were bringing on very, very great, insightful voices like a John Lobb to talk all things college football. And we'll get into some NFL, too, with John as we go back to our progressive guest line. John, kind enough to stick with us here for a second segment, and we've yet to get into the ACC, which, because of the perceived weakness potentially of Clemson this year, does open up just kind of a fascinating window into a league that, you know, has a Florida State team as well trying to replace Jordan Travis at quarterback. A lot of question marks there, and there's a couple of sleepers that you're looking at. How do we value the Virginia Tech Hokies this year, who have really been down for the better part of a half decade, but are starting, seemingly based on some of the recruiting rankings and stuff in the portal, to be very slowly, admittedly, but very slowly turning things around there in Blacksburg?
I really like the depth on this team. The recruiting analysis tells us that the roster is stronger. And if you have not seen Kyrone Drones play quarterback yet, you have been missing out on one of the most dynamic dual threat quarterbacks in the nation. He originally went to Baylor. I don't think he got a snap, if my memory serves me, or it was so limited. And then he transferred to Virginia Tech. He did not open the season as a starter last year. Somewhere around week 4 or 5, he takes over. I believe he's 6'4", over 220 pounds. I would like to, without hyperbole, he kind of looks a little bit like a Cam Newton type of athlete and quarterback on the field. And he is dynamic. He has the potential for like 700 rushing yards, 3,000 passing yards, at least 30 total touchdowns with a high ceiling. If you haven't noticed, I believe they have 9 returning offensive players. Their defense is as stacked as it's been. I mean, I can go back to the 1990s when they had one of the better defensive every year. But this defense is going to hit you. I like their linebackers. They have a dynamic pass-catching back in Brayshon Tootin. I believe this is his 5th year. He's from an FCS school. Came to the Hokies last year, has played extremely well. And they do have some speed bumps. You got to worry about on the road against Miami. I get that. At home against Clemson. But other than that, their schedule is rather favorable. And if you're going to beat the Hokies, you're going to have to punch them in the mouth because they're going to punch you back.
Tech 12-1 to win the ACC, and I do think this is a conference that is more wide open than people are anticipating because Ben alluded to Jordan Travis gone from Florida State, but obviously both receivers, Wilson and Keon Coleman, they lose their running back Benson, right? And I'm not a DJ Uiagalelei guy. I do see them taking a step back, and I do want to back Miami at 4-1. However, you think there may be another shot on a team that's flying under the radar?
I really think people are missing the boat on North Carolina State. And as I was doing the research, you know, North Carolina State has never had back-to-back 9-win seasons, and they have never made the ACC championship game. So what does that tell me? And this is a little narrative-based, but narrative-based helps coaches give you goals. And if you know this North Carolina Wolfpack, you know they're going to hear it throughout training camp. Let's get those back-to-back 9-win seasons. Let's get to the ACC championship game. I completely concur with you with Florida State. And I'm a Mike Norvell guy. I think he's a very good coach. I've loved him since he was at Memphis. But they've lost so much production on offense. Oh, man. That production on offense is massive. Clemson, I just don't think they have the depth right now that they've had when they were in the great Dabo Swinney years. And here's 2 players that I like that North Carolina State brought in that are very, very important. Quarterback Grayson McCall from Coastal Carolina. I believe this is going to be his 5th season at quarterback because he started during COVID, I believe, as a freshman or maybe a redshirt freshman. I forget exactly what he was back then. So he's been incredibly productive at Coastal Carolina. He can compete in the ACC and lead this offense. And if you don't know, they brought in Justin Jolly, the tight end from UConn. Look at Justin Jolly's numbers last year, people. He is a very, very, very good tight end, completely under the radar. He might have 700 yards receiving with 6 or 7 touchdowns for this North Carolina State team. And again, schedule matters. They play the last game of the year in North Carolina, but I think North Carolina is down. And then can they beat Clemson on the road? I'm not worried about the Tennessee game because it has nothing to do with in-conference record. That is going to be difficult, but they play Tennessee at home.
He's John Lobby. Follow him at Gridiron School 91 joining us right now on Sharp Money. Anytime the state name, the team, Colorado, gets mentioned, it kind of sends a shiver through people's spine. They're like, oh, Colorado, what's this going to be? It's polarizing of a team in the country. Your thought is that the star player for Colorado, who we see play both ways, Travis Hunter, as much as there is hype around Colorado that might not back up the data behind it, at the same time, narrative-wise, what's the case here that Hunter might actually be a legitimate long-shot candidate to be a finalist come Heisman season?
I did not expect to go here with Travis Hunter, but I started my research. I did a FSGA, which is Fantasy Sports Gaming Association prop bet draft. And I like to look for some deep, you know, I like to have the 3,000 to 1 get, you know, put $20 down and get a real nice Christmas present, right? And in my research, do you know Travis Hunter played over 1,000 snaps last year? He played like 650 on defense, 350 on offense. He had over 700 yards receiving. I like the narrative. If Colorado starts off 2-3, 2 wins, 3 wins, you know Travis Hunter is going to get the ball. Right now, Deion Sanders is talking about his son Shador and Travis Hunter as top 5 picks in the NFL draft. I do think Travis Hunter might be the best defensive back I have seen since Champ Bailey, Darrell Revis, and I'm going to go back to Charles Woodson. That's how good he is as a defensive back. Now, as a receiver, if he played receiver full-time, you would probably make the argument he's a second-round draft pick. So this is fascinating. Now, the only way Travis Hunter can win it is if Colorado wins the conference, they win 10 games. So it is a little narrative driven. But we haven't had a player like this since Charles Woodson with Michigan when he won in the 90s. And I think the nation would welcome this type of player who's a non-quarterback. Because if you've looked at what is it, like 14 out of the last 15 years has been a quarterback. So I think if this player, if they go 9-2 and he has like 800 yards receiving and 12 interceptions or some crazy number, I think we got gold there.
And when you look at defensive players winning, they have to be able to contribute in special teams. They have to maybe play a receiver. That's how it's gone in the past with the few that have done so. So I like where you're coming from there. Let's sneak one more in because I'm a big Matt Rhule guy, and Matt Rhule wins everywhere he goes. They still Raiola, the quarterback from Georgia. He's coming in. The program, you know, is focusing on NIL better, you know, this year than they have in the last couple of years, right? They're making a commitment to winning in Nebraska, and you think they have a possible long shot chance here in the Big Ten?
Absolutely. I mean, obviously Ohio State is the heavy, heavy favorite. But Harbaugh's left Michigan. My friends, that's a big, big change. And how much did production I think they have one starter coming back on offense, maybe two starters. And I think their defense is pretty depleted also. And most importantly, they don't have a quarterback. So if you take out Michigan as possibly taking a step backward, it's not going to crater, but a step backwards. And you give Ohio State, they're Ohio State, they're going to roll people. But then you look at this Nebraska team. I've been a Matt Rhule guy since he was at Temple. Matt Rhule turned that Temple program around. I think that was about 10 years ago now. Then he went to Baylor. He was successful at Baylor. Very good. He was not an NFL coach. I think he was in over his head at Carolina. So what does he do? He ends up back at Nebraska. There's no reason Nebraska can't be good. They have the infrastructure. They have the talent. They have the facilities. Matt Rhule is going to get this team on a roll. I'm telling you, I can't believe I already penciled in this game. Everyone, if on Saturday, September 7th, if you are going out, you're making a mistake. We have Nebraska at Colorado, folks. This game is going to be as juicy and as tasty as almost any game in the month of September. The media, it's on NBC Sports. The media is going to blow this game up. Colorado's going to be jumping. You know Shador and Deion are going to be chirping. Travis Hunter's a
talker. You know it, John.
And Matt Rhule, oh my
John,
God.
John, we got to go.
When Nebraska goes to Colorado.
That's so good. We love it.
Great stuff.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Friday edition of Sharp Money continues from downtown Las Vegas. Bar Canada at the D still to come. We will go through a very, very big Friday baseball card. Dustin has a bevy of bets. We do share a bet. We do like a dog today.
That's good. No, that's the problem. I have six dogs today. I have six plus money bets, and I didn't intend to do it. It's this weird thing you get, and we can talk to Scott about this next, is when you're hot, you think you're seeing the board better. Therefore, you start convincing yourself of some long shots. I got a 192 dog. I got a 142 dog. Like, I'm a little out of control today. I might need to dial it back.
Okay. Well, we'll get to Scott Rochelle's thoughts on that right now on our progressive guest line. Because when Dustin says he's been seeing the board well, I mean, he had 1-3 in O'Day. That's what's funny.
No, I'm number one at VSiN.com/picks. No big deal. I can't remember where I 8-3 to start the week.
Back from vacation. That's the you said the first day back from vacation, though. You were like, yeah, I'm just firing.
Seven and three.
Yeah. Anyway, Scott's nodding. He's impressed with that. Scott, there's a couple of dogs Scott likes for today. Good to have you on as always, man. Appreciate you coming back here to Sharp Money. And the first dog we'll discuss is in that Yankees Red Sox series tonight, where hard to know what to expect now for the Yankees, who've been playing really, really bad baseball. What do you make of the spot in particular where Nestor Cortes has to go onto the road and a tough environment, certainly for pitchers there going to Fenway Park?
Yeah, Cortes on the road being favored, I'll pass. I'll take the Red Sox on the money line in this spot here. The Yankees have been one of the worst teams in the league for the last month and change. They're not White Sox bad, but they're close, which is not a good sign. The Red Sox, though, are 4-2 straight up against the Yankees this season. Cortes on the road, 50 2/3 innings, a 6.04 ERA. Bayo's pitching for Boston. I will admit he has not been great this season either. Been better lately, though. He has allowed less than 4 earned in 3 of his last 4. But simply put, the Yankees right now should not be favored against basically anybody, but especially against Boston, who's done well against them. I'll take the Red Sox at plus money.
Love it. You know, bet with the streak, whether it's winning or losing. Sure. Let that thing ride. The vibes are real. Scott, I don't know how you have enough hours in the day, man. You got tennis picks we'll get to later. You have Olympic picks. We're doing baseball now. Like, I don't know where you find the time for this. However, I do like a play you're coming at today. George Kirby on the bump, taking on Thorpe. It's the White Sox and the Mariners. And you expect this one to be a pitcher's duel.
Yes, I do. I see the total at 7.5, and it might take 20 innings for these teams to get to 7.5. I'll go with the under. These teams, just simply put, are brutal offensively. The Mariners have scored less than 3 runs in 7 of their last 8. White Sox have scored less than 4 runs in 11 of their last 12. Both teams are bottom 3 in runs per game for the entire season. And of course, the main headline, I'd say at midnight, was Arozarena being traded to Seattle. He's not going to play in this game. I believe he's reporting on Saturday, so the extra, I'd say, oomph in the lineup will not be there. But these teams can hit. Thorpe's been great. He has an ERA basically of like 1.5 over the last month, and you see Kirby, who's been great for about 2 months straight. Give me the under 7.5. I see another low-scoring classic Seattle game, 3-2, 4-2 final.
Yeah, that thing getting pounded. See a lot of books here starting to go to 7, and it's very very prescient if Scott is telling us how much conviction he has in an under in a game involving the White Sox bullpen, Dustin. That kind of tells you.
Oh, yeah.
All you need to know. One other total you're going to look at, too. Very, very good series with the Guardians trying to hang on there in the AL Central, leaking a little bit of oil going into the break, but still a few games up on both Minnesota and Kansas City, taking on Philadelphia. It's a Ben Lively, Christopher Sanchez matchup tonight there in Philly. What do you make of the spot for two teams at the top of their divisions tonight?
Yeah, so I really have no interest in Cleveland on the side based on their current form. I like the under in this game, though, at 8.5. That total does feel a bit high to me. Guardians, also a team that can't hit right now. They have scored less than 3 runs in 5 of their last 6. And you are looking at Sanchez, who has been great at home this season. 6-6 innings, a 1.5 ERA. I know Philly's offense has been solid for the entire season, but Lively's been serviceable. I think he can do enough to limit the damage. But it's mostly fading Cleveland's offense, who might contribute pretty much less than 3 runs at any given night. So that being the case, I am going to go with the under. Philly might end up scoring 5. No guarantee Cleveland gets the 4 in this game. So we can survive a Philly offensive explosion, in theory. I like the under 8.5.
Yeah, we're both on the same team, just in different ways here when it comes to the Marlins and the Brewers. We've got Trevor Rogers on the bump on the road, taking on Freddie Peralta, who has, for some reason, been really bad at home. I just thought plus 192 was way too much considering all of that. I do like where you're coming from here and backing the Marlins team total, which is awfully low today, Scott.
Yeah, so I also like the money line on the MLB gambling podcast yesterday, but I do like the team total a bit more for Miami as the safer option. It is a bit juicy, though. It was at minus 130. Now it's at about minus 145. Team totals at 2.5 for a road team getting 9 guaranteed at bats. And Miami's actually been good offensively. They have scored at least 3 runs in 10 of their last 11. As you said before, kind of riding the streak there, with Miami quietly being decent offensively, gave Baltimore all they could handle over the last couple of days. Peralta, you mentioned at home, though, 4.5 ERA. Sometimes he's good, sometimes he's bad. What are we going to get in this one? I don't know, but I don't trust them. And I think with that being the case, 2.5 for a road team does feel a bit low. Give me the team total over.
Follow Scott at Reichel Radio, R-E-I-C-H-E-L Radio, joining us here on Sharp Money, talking a little baseball, but we'll also get into some Olympic betting on the basketball, as well as the tennis, which I'm stoked that you have bets on, as that stuff's set to get underway here this weekend. Just finished up with the opening ceremonies. Dustin took umbrage with the fact that they did the opening ceremonies after the first event already started.
Well, you can't have a grand opening after the business is already opened. It doesn't make sense to me.
I know. Well, some people might not consider archery a sport. I guess that's the bigger issue at play right now. Scott, to the basketball here, which most of the games get underway tomorrow. The general consensus was that Group B, where France, the host nation, is in, they tried to construct the group most optimal for them to advance. But there is a sleeper in that group you actually like that you feel could give a really good test there to the French, respectively, there. What's the angle as you take a look at how these groups are set up here for the men's basketball?
Yeah, so the problem with Group B is that there's two teams that basically are priced that they have no chance to actually do anything in this event, but I actually do like Germany in this group at plus 175. France, I know people are panicking about USA losing, or I should say almost losing, to South Sudan and Germany, and they had a couple of games there that were very competitive. People haven't really focused on what's happened with France in the exhibition games recently. They were horrible in the tune-up games for the Olympics. They actually lost 3 straight. So I don't exactly like the current form France is in. And I think Germany, after winning the Euro Cup last year, they did almost beat Team USA. Solid showing there, ended up losing, but still a good effort nonetheless. I like this team in general. I think they're pretty underrated, and I do think France might be overvalued being the host nation. I like Germany at plus 175.
All right, well, you also have another bet. Canada and France, which the people of Montreal are going to be very conflicted on this matchup. They're not going to like
Quebec City.
Yeah, real issues there. But you see value in backing one of the sides here?
I do. I actually like Canada in the matchup market against France. I see it at minus 140. I like that quite a bit. Once again, I'm not exactly sold on France's upside for the event. They might end up getting a medal out of it, but the point is Canada, I think, is viewed as the consensus second-best team in this event, and there's no reason for me to doubt that. We know that Canada has a lot of NBA talent, led by Shea, of course, but I think that you're looking at Canada having a pretty easy opportunity to get into the actual elimination round. Same thing with France, but I do think that Canada is the better overall team. Minus 140, I think, is a good price fading a France team that, once again, I'm not sold on their current form. Right. Give me Canada to do better than France at minus 140.
Yeah, just making sure we have the language on that, and that's part of what makes the Olympic betting so fascinating. So many different markets now. You're just getting Canada. So to advance further in the tournament, if they were to both lose in the quarters, that would be a draw. Is that correct on that, Scott?
Yes, you just got to push.
There you go. All right, that's good enough as far as a Canada team also getting a lot of hype, too, for, yes, the best of the rest, sans USA, big favorites there to win that tournament. Okay, to the tennis, where they'll be playing at Roland Garros. You have the women's side, Iga Świątek, giant favorite, as she should be, as the current queen of clay. That there's really no contest on that right now as a minus $2 favorite. But men's side is really fascinating because you're coming off of a kind of a herky-jerky grass season that had a lot of upsets. Now you go back to the clay here. What's your general strategy with Carlos Alcaraz? They're a short minus money favorite to win it all.
Well, of course, you have him winning the French Open, and it's going to be held in the same exact courts he just won on. So the point is, he should be in a good spot. The real question is, do you want to lay minus 125? And I actually do like his draw quite a bit. Think the quarter is pretty favorable for him. He's minus 550 to win the quarter. So I think he's basically expected to coast into the elimination rounds and into the, let's just say, quarters and semis. But for his actual potential matchup in the semis, you have Medvedev or Ruud, and I think that Alcaraz would be a pretty decent favorite over both guys. He's done very well, historically speaking, against Medvedev, and he did beat Ruud in the U.S. Open final a couple years ago. But Alcaraz does have a pretty favorable draw. I think 125 is pretty reasonable. You can argue actually a bit cheap. I think it should actually be higher, at like minus 140, minus 150. But I think that he's got a great chance to win it. A reminder, though, of the actual format for this event, it is 2 out of 3. So you might be seeing more upsets. We saw the French Open was 3 out of 5, where you generally see the cream rise to the top, where the best player wins the majority of the time. 2 out of 3, though, you leave yourself more prone to upsets. But I think Alcaraz is right now just in great form. He's the best player in the world. We saw him win the French Open, saw him win Wimbledon. I really don't want to jump in front of him right now, but I do like him to win the event at minus 125. I'm also going to go with the runner-up, though, in the French Open. Alex Zverev at plus 650. I think that he's got a pretty solid draw as well. We saw him, of course, lose to Alcaraz, controversial in-out call there with a double fault, which went against him. But that match was competitive. Zverev is a very solid clay player. I think 650 is a good price for him as well.
And you can get quarter pricing on Zverev, just over even money in the plus 110 range. I like that angle as well, considering the mental struggles Taylor Fritz has had, who is also probably the next best player in Zverev's quarter as well. Yeah, the 2 of 3 makes the men's tournament awesome because you tend to see a lot of upsets as a result of that. And we're on clay. Definitely, obviously, the slowest surface and somewhat hard to predict. All right, Scott Reichel, always kind to give us some time here. Good to catch up with you, man. Thanks so much for the wide-ranging array of bets on the offer today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We will come back, talk a little three-point stance news and notes around NFL training camp when we come back here on Sharp Money.